Hey, Cooper.
Ian.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Is that
Oh, what fun.
I was kind of hoping that you had like some
bar or something that
yeah,
I was going to spit.
Yeah, some like dirt, like some sick ass bar or like some really fucked up twist to Jingle Bells.
Nope.
Awesome.
Nope.
Awesome.
Nope, that comes later.
That totally makes sense.
Or earlier, depending on how you look at it. You know, December 5th, pretty tough day.
Yeah, it can be.
Mm-hmm.
If you're
a victim.
You know, a piece of shit child.
Yeah, yeah. December 5th is the day of piece of shit children.
Yes.
Getting brutally murdered and...
Murdered!
And stolen.
Depending on what you believe.
Yeah, well, of course.
How you believe it.
I believe it all.
Well... Since you believe it all, maybe we should get into this podcast. So welcome to Drinking Our Way Through History, where we cover the legendary people
places,
spectacles, and events that history has to offer while enjoying a thick pour of whiskey. I am Cooper.
And I am Ian.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was lost.
I bet you, how many people thought that the podcast was lagging?
It's a cruel prank there.
Yeah,
Ian.
I know. I'm a menace to society. What can I say?
Now, in the heart of winter, a season steeped in tradition, two distinct figures emerge to shape the spirit of Christmas. One is the embodiment of kindness and generosity, a saint whose legacy spans century, Saint Nicholas. The other, a darker counterpart. Lurking in the shadows of folklore with a menacing presence comes Krampus.
Krampus.
We will explore the fascinating journey of Saint Nicholas from his early life of charity to the evolution into the beloved figure of Santa Claus.
Santa.
And as we unravel the benevolence of Saint Nicholas, we will also delve into the eerie folklore surrounding Krampus, highlighting the contrasting elements that coexist in the Christmas narrative.
I am so fucking pumped!
This is actually, it's pretty exciting. So we're going to go from Saint Nick, and we're going to go to Santa Claus, and then we're going to go to Krampus!
Ugh. Which we haven't decided yet the correct pronunciation of Krampus. Like in America, I feel like we call him Krampus, but in Germany, they call him what, Cooper?
No. You were saying Krampus.
No, I was saying Krampus.
No, you were saying Krampus earlier.
No, that is a completely false statement.
Dude, I'm going to throw the flag. We need to watch a replay.
Okay, watch a replay. Okay. Our decision stands, and I've never called him Krampus.
Ian called him Krampus earlier.
I have never called him Krampus a day in my life. I literally argued with you in my doorway earlier.
About calling him Krampus.
About you calling him Krampus.
I didn't call him Krampus.
What did you call him?
I said Krampus.
No, you didn't! You gaslighting piece of shit! Merry Christmas, ladies and gentlemen.
Aren't you so excited to hang around with your families out there?
I was so excited for this episode until just now!
Because Ian's just full of shit.
God, I fucking hate it. You're not getting anything for Christmas.
That's a lie. You know what? From you, I have no idea, honestly.
Now I guess you'll never know.
It would be nice if somebody told the audience to rate the podcast and maybe plug it.
Oh, God, guys, we have to save Cooper. We have to save Cooper. He's choking. The only way that you can save him is by hitting that like button, hitting that 5-star review button, leaving us a nice review underneath. Go ahead and comment on Cooper's shitty mic voice, if you will, in the review. But make sure it's 5 stars, of course.
Yeah, please.
Go ahead and tell us just how shitty Cooper's mic voice is and how much better it would be. How much better of a Christmas you would have if he would pronounce Krampus the way he said he was gonna.
Krampus.
There we go.
Krampus.
Yeah, what's the Germanic word for Krampus? What is his name in German?
Oh, it's Krampus, yeah.
But Krampus, what isn't it like
Krampusnacht is the
Krampusnacht
is December 5th, the night or the day before Saint Nicholas is the feast, the day, what is it? The feast day of Saint Nicholas. There we go. Sorry.
Okay.
Took me a little bit. I was word bumbling there.
Yeah, no, I put you on the spot. You did good though. You did good.
Yes. Yeah. So Krampusnacht is the day before, and it's basically like, it's like a Christmas Halloween.
Or a Christmas Eve.
No.
Christmas Halloween, because everybody dresses. We'll talk.
Cross-maline.
We'll get there. We'll get there, okay, Ian. Okay, we'll get there.
Well, speaking of getting there, where do all things begin, Cooper?
Usually birth. The beginning.
Okay. The early life of St. Nicholas, the real Santa Claus. Now, as Americans, we know the jolly old man with his white shiny beard, rosy red cheeks, and large red suit as Santa Claus, who brings gifts to all the good little boys and girls. Well, underneath that red fluffy suit is the story of a Christian monk who lived in the 3rd century AD that is known by the name of St. Nicholas.
St. Nicholas.
St. Nicholas, born in the 3rd century in Patara.
Yeah.
Nice. A coastal town in what is now Turkey, emerged from humble beginnings to become a revered figure in Christian tradition. Raised in a devout Christian family, his life took a turn when he inherited significant wealth following the untimely death of his parents due to a pandemic when Nicholas was still fairly young. Rather than succumb to the temptations of wealth and luxury, Nicholas dedicated himself to a life of service and charity, obeying the word of Jesus to sell what you own and give the money to the poor. Nicholas used his entire inheritance to assist the needy, the sick, and the suffering.
He's like a really good guy.
Yeah.
He's like a really good guy.
Yeah.
He's like...
Good guy Nicholas over here.
He's a good guy. He's a good guy. He's like a friend.
That's why there's that figure of speech. You know, you're a real Saint Nick.
Is that a figure of speech?
I just made it up just now.
Is that the figure of speech?
It should be. It should be. And I'm sure somewhere someone said it. Can't be the first.
You're impressing me right now.
Thank you.
With your ad-lib skills.
I'm pretty.
So on top of the world.
Par.
Nope.
On par.
I wanted to say on top of the world, so that's what I said, because I'm good at ad-libs.
And you know what else is on top of the world? The North Pole.
Oh, man. Wait, I was going to say Lil Wayne, because he's about to pick the world up and drop it on your fucking head.
Pick the world up and I'm going to drop it on your fucking head.
All right.
Anyway. Now, one of the most enduring stories from his early life is the tale of three sisters. A man who is extremely poor and unable to marry off his daughters due to the impoverished circumstances was on the brink of selling them into slavery.
Well, I'm broke, so I guess you guys got to go into indentured servitude for the rest of your life. I'm sorry, but I got to pay the bills, you know?
There's variations of this story across the board. This is just kind of like... He probably had to sell them off or something like that. Like, women at the time didn't have, like, many opportunities. It was like, you get to be sold off into the sex trade, or you get to be a slave.
He was in a pretty bad place.
Yeah, wasn't great mm-hmm. position. Mm-hmm. Like I said, or like we have said many times, best time to be alive is right now.
Yeah.
Now, faced with this financial hardship, the father, obligated by the customs of the time, needed to provide a substantial dowry to secure a suitable marriage for his daughters. A dowry of significant value increased the likelihood of finding respectable husbands for the young women, while the absence of one made marriage very improbable.
Yeah, well,
almost impossible.
What can I say, man? If she don't got a house, two horses, a barn, $17,000 in jewelry, I don't even want to marry her.
Well, a lot of time, dads would give away cattle.
Yeah,
pigs,
cattle, stuff like goats, that. Yeah,
there's a story about like a pig being sold off somewhere. Like, I can't remember. It's a childhood story though.
Interesting.
Yeah, where the pig was being exchanged for the daughter. I can't mm-hmm. remember.
I remember it from Aragon because Sloane retracted Katrina's dowry from Rorin when they decided to become betrothed.
Holy shit! That's such a Oh my God, my brain just like...
Back in the day, right?
God damn.
It's a good one. Those of you who know though. Highly recommend the Aragon series. Great book.
Very good series. Now, having recently fallen to hard times, the father found himself unable to afford the necessary dowries, leaving him with the agonizing choice of selling his daughters into slavery or possibly even the sex trade. Now, remarkably, on three separate occasions... When each sister was of age, a mysterious bag of gold materialized in their home.
Must have been a heavy bag.
Enabling the distressed father to offer them as dowries for his three daughters. The bags of gold were reportedly thrown through a window and landed in the stockings or shoes that were left by the fire to dry. And this occurrence started the tradition of children hanging stockings or placing shoes in anticipation of receiving gifts from St. Nicholas. In some versions of the story, three gold balls are mentioned instead of bags.
which are now symbolized with oranges in contemporary depictions of St. Nicholas.
Dude, I can't tell you how many times I have told people that mom gives us oranges in our stockings, yeah. And they've been like, what the fuck?
Why?
This is why. Wow, the three gold balls. Huh. Who would have thought?
Nothing more important than three gold balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, this act of kindness would be the first of many, establishing St. Nicholas as a symbol of compassion and generosity.
Yeah. So St. Nicholas continued his journey of kindness as he rose to prominence within the Christian community, eventually becoming the Bishop of Myra. In this clerical role, St. Nicholas not only defended the Christian faith, but also extended his compassionate acts to those in need. Must not have known very much about the Crusades, but, you know, it is what it is.
I don't...
What's the timeline on that?
Oh, God. This is 3rd century AD, so...
That's pre-Crusades, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. Because he's actually... The Christians get exiled at some point, and he gets exiled, and then he dies, like, 20
okay, years ago. So it's pre-Crusades.
I didn't look up this timeline, so I have no idea. We're just spitting out of our ass.
You're just spitting out of your ass,
it
sir.
Is a talent that I did win a talent show with. So
I forgot you did that. Yeah, that's actually
mom's got it on camera somewhere.
Yeah, that's actually a real life fact. Wow. So as bishop,
no, it's not. we can't sell it so honestly.
No, that really happened. No, mom has it on film. I've seen it twice. I don't know why you're trying to say it didn't happen. Kind of like how earlier I said Krampus, right?
I'm sorry, who are you? New phone, who dis?
Oh, brotherly love. Now, as bishop, St. Nicholas became a symbol of hope for the people of Myra. His reputation for generosity and kindness was supplemented by his dedication to the well-being of people in need. He used his position to advocate for justice and champion the cause of the less fortunate, earning him admiration beyond the boundaries of his parish. A particularly famous story from St. Nicholas's time as a bishop involves his intervention on behalf of three innocent men who face an execution. St. Nicholas approached the executioner and, through his sincere prayers, miraculously prevented the executioner, sparing the lives of the innocent men.
Please, dear Lord, give this man the finest pussy in the world.
My axe, it's not moving! My axe.
Allow him to be flooded with all of the pussy.
But my cock.
During Christmases.
My cock is harder than my axe.
Yes, this is what I'm seeking
my
for.
My cock.
Yes, all of the pussy.
I must go to the whorehouse.
Men, you are free.
That's pretty much exactly how it went down. That's an actual recording that we just played from the time. They had a portable recorder there. First of its age.
There are numerous accounts that talk about Nicholas's time with the sea and how he helped these seamen. Now, in his youth, he embarked on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, seeking spiritual enlightenment by retracing Jesus's footsteps. On the return journey by sea, a fierce storm posed a serious threat to the ship, and unfazed, Nicholas calmly prayed, "Please, dear Lord, give us all the pussy when we land, dear Lord.
All of a sudden, mermaids just came on the side of the ship and just unleashed their mer-pussies.
The storm parted away.
Yeah, just like their mer-pussies. It was great.
Now, to the astonishment of the terrified sailors, the tumultuous weather suddenly subsided, sparing everyone on board. Hence, St. Nicholas became revered as the patron of sailors and voyagers.
God, this guy was so lucky. Like, if you look at it, like, it's just, these are just, coincidences.
Oh, super big coincidences.
Like, this man is the luckiest dude on the planet. Not that he's not a good guy or anything, but that is fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
It's he's just like, he sees a little part in the clouds that no one's seen yet. He's like, oh, this shit's about to fucking
end. About to go down.
He's like, dear Lord, part the tides. Let the calm waters come. And then all of a sudden, 5 minutes go by. It's him just screaming that shit. And it's just calm waters. And everyone's like, holy shit, this guy's fucking real.
You just look down the way. You see a guy with a really long beard parting the Red Sea. And it's actually just Noah. It's actually just because Noah's part of the sea.
Give Nick a big ass wink I got you, dog. I got you.
We're both doing the same shit, my boy.
Doing the Lord's work. Am
Praise
I right?
the Lord,
Am
my right? dog.
Air high five. Air high five.
Shit, whole I can't do it. I can't do it. And just everyone dies. Oh, this is a Family Guy like cutaway scene
really
that we just had happen there. No, that's good. That's good.
Now, while St. Nicholas's deeds were numerous and varied, they all shared a common thread: a selfless dedication to helping those in need. His life as a bishop was marked by a commitment to the principles of justice, compassion, and charity, laying the foundation for the enduring legacy that would eventually evolve into the modern figure of Santa Claus. Nicholas dedicated his life to God and was made Bishop of Myra, but under the rule of Roman Emperor Diocletian, who ruthlessly persecuted Christians, Nicholas was exiled and imprisoned. He was released in 325 AD and died almost 20 years later in 343 AD.
Wow.
Now, both Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches have celebrated December 6th as the date of his passing for more than 1,000 years now, even though the actual date of his death is unknown. December 6th became St. Nicholas Feast Day. Oh, it's not the day of feast of Saint, whatever I said at the beginning. Yeah, or did I say this right? I don't even know.
Yeah, you might have.
So December 6th became St. Nicholas Feast Day, which became a significant celebration in various European countries. So on this day, communities would come together to honor their generous saint, right? And acts of kindness, feasts, and the exchange of small gifts were common traditions associated with St. Nicholas's Feast Day. These customs laid the foundation for the spirit of giving that would later be synonymous with Santa Claus.
Good old Santa Claus.
Santa Claus. Now, Saint Nick performed numerous secret and selfless deeds done without any expectation of getting something in return. Within a century of his passing, Nicholas attained the status of a saint, celebrated for his role as a friend and protector of all in trouble or in need.
What a good guy.
He's a good guy.
What a good...
Good guy, Nick.
What a good Christian. Those are rare. We don't usually talk about the good Christians. We tend to talk about the ones that killed millions of people.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking, I'm like, there's so many more good Christians than there are bad, but the bad ones are like
just
really
so
bad.
They're just so bad. Like, for every one bad Christian, there's 1,000 good Christians, but the one bad Christian kills over 1,000 people. So it just, you know, doesn't really equal out. You know,
it is what it is. Religion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just Christians. It's a lot. Everybody but Buddhists, really.
What are they doing?
They're just chilling, bro.
They're like the cats of religion, man.
They're just observing.
Chilling.
No,
watching.
Because cats hunt.
Cats do hunt.
Buddhists don't hunt
at all. No. So that's a bad comparison.
They're like the Trees. Hounds. Like the
hounds?
Yeah, like the not the hounds, but like the really lazy like big dogs that just kind of lay there all day and like meditate almost.
Are you talking about like that big one with the droopy face?
Yeah,
like,
droopy the dog. Yeah. Even though they can be real mean. Bloodhound.
Bloodhound.
Yeah.
I do feel like they have to be mean because
they can
of,
be mean.
Of their name, Bloodhound.
No. They're just good at smelling blood. They don't draw it, Cooper.
I don't think that's how like dog breed names work, though.
No.
I know nothing about dogs. So.
One of the oldest stories showing St. Nicholas as a protector of children takes place long after his death. The townspeople of Myra were celebrating the saint on the eve of his feast day, December 5th, when a band of Arab pirates from Crete came into the Myra district. They raided the church of St. Nicholas, grabbing all the treasures they could lay their hands on. On their way out of town, they also snatched a young boy named Basilios to sell him to their king as a slave.
Making that money.
Yeah, you gotta make that bag.
No, look at that boy.
Saying?
Look at that boy.
You gotta make that bag.
He could bring wine to the king.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah,
we could
make some good money
and
here,
he
boys.
He doesn't even speak the king's language. You know? That's safety. So the king selected Basilios to be his personal cupbearer because, of course, he did not know their language, which kept the king safe since Basilios would not understand what the king said to those around him. For an entire year, Basilios found himself serving the king, filling his golden cup with wine. Meanwhile, back in Myra, Basilios' parents were living through a nightmare. Their only child was gone, and the days passed by slow and heavy with grief. As the next St. Nicholas feast day approached,
Basilios's mom couldn't bear to join the celebrations. For her, feast day was clouded in grief. But after some time, she agreed to have a quiet observance at home, where she prayed for Basilios' safe return. Back at the king's palace, Basilios is suddenly whisked away. Saint Nicholas himself appeared to the startled young boy, giving him a blessing, and just like that, Basilios found himself back in Myra, holding the king's golden cup.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Now, there's another story where three students were on their way back, they were on their way to study in Athens, right? And they were robbed, and then they were murdered, and then they were stored in large pickling tubs by an innkeeper who was going to serve them up as pork to, unsuspecting guests.
Nice, nice. Right? Yeah.
So there's a couple variations of this where, the butcher actually killed him or the innkeeper killed him. Depends on where you're at in Europe. But they were going to be served up as meat for sandwiches and shit. Nicholas stopped at the inn and dreamt of the crime. He woke up, he prayed to God, and the three boys brought back to life.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, easy peasy lemon squeezy.
It's just that simple.
All you got to do. Guys, if you ever lose a loved one, all you have to do is just pray to God and they'll come right back. It's tried and true. Saint Nick did it. What?
That's just
what's okay. So funny. What's so funny? Is that not true? Saint Nick did it. It's in the script.
It's in the script. So it's got to be fact.
The script is law.
Because
we all know
this. It's
written
down. Yeah. It must be real.
I saw it on the internet. It's where I get my news.
Now, on December 6th, his commonly accepted death day, it was traditionally considered a lucky day to make large purchases or to get married.
Mm.
And by the Renaissance, St. Nicholas was the most popular saint in Europe. His popularity survived the Protestant Reformation when the worship of saints began to be discouraged. And his positive reputation has grown ever since.
Mm-hmm-hmm. Yes, so, yes, yes. So let's go ahead and move on to Santa Claus.
Let's get into Santa Claus.
Yeah, where'd this whole tomfoolery start and why we decide to move it 20 days in the future? You know, Christians.
Because
Jesus.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Honestly, you know the real story of why Jesus was born out of, you know, she was a virgin? Well, Saint Nick showed up. He fucked the Virgin Mary because he was a saint, it didn't count, right? So he delivered Jesus to us.
Oh, and that's why he delivers us presents. Gifts.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. It all started with a baby Jesus out of the Virgin Mary.
And you know what? Maybe the three orange balls? Maybe he just had three balls.
And those were the three wise men.
Oh, my God!
Oh! It all comes through. It all comes first, full circle. Everything but Mary, because she was a virgin. She doesn't come at all.
She doesn't come at all.
Not once. Not once. Jesus. That was jam-packed with puns. I'm so happy that you let me run with that.
That was great. That was fun.
Thanks. Thanks. Anyway, moving on to Santa Claus. So, the Dutch influence on the evolution of St. Nicholas into the cherished figure of Santa Claus is a fascinating journey embedded in cultural exchange and creative adaptation. Dutch immigrants arriving in America brought the Sinterklaas tradition with them, which was a character inspired by St. Nicholas, but embellished with distinctive Dutch nuances. So, picture Sinterklaas, a tall, slender figure, donned in a red bishop's robe, boasting a flowing beard. This Dutch persona seamlessly blended with local customs, and it laid the groundwork for the transformation of the Americanized Santa Claus.
Basically just a big Macy's ad.
Yeah, but it's like he's skinny.
He is.
Yeah.
He's ripped.
Not fat yet.
You know what, though? We've been seeing a lot of skinny Santa Claus statues around town.
We have. I don't know what it is about this year in Atlanta, but there's no fat Santas.
It's so weird.
We went to the mall the other day. Santa Claus, skinny. We were walking down the street the other day. We see a little freaking statue of Santa Claus outside. Skinny.
It's so weird.
They're everywhere.
I'm bring back chubby Santa.
Yeah, what happened to fat Santa?
Yeah, he's eating cookies.
Since when do you fat shame Santa Claus?
Yeah, I'm like, first of all, this is misinformation because all's what he eats, milk and cookies.
Yeah,
right.
And what happens when Santa comes upon your roof, looks down and sees a statue of him, and it's 70 pounds lighter than he is. Not 70, sorry, 200 pounds lighter than he is. You think he's going to be a little pissed?
He's gonna be like, who's that? Oh, they think I'm skinny? What is this? I worked up all this
fat so that I can stay warm while I slay around all
blubber.
Night.
It's blubber, guys.
Yeah.
It's survival. Okay, you're making fun of a man for surviving. Exactly. He lives in the North Pole. I know who's getting coal this Christmas.
All the people who think Santa's skinny?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that mean that the Dutch are also going to be since they did this in the 1700s?
Well, no, no. He might have been skinny back then.
Yeah, I guess he's had some time to put on the weight,
Yeah,
right?
He could have put on the weight since then.
That's okay. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But it's definitely, like, it takes more than a year to lose that weight, ladies and gentlemen.
It does. So, like, be nice. Jesus Christ. Baby Jesus Christ. So, the late 18th
What, do you have something to say, Cooper?
I was going
to
go full Ricky Bobby there, but I'm good.
All right, classic. I feel so bad for the people who listen to our podcast for the history. We still love you. So the late 18th century witnessed St. Nicholas making his mark on American popular culture, meaning that he was commercialized.
Exactly.
In December of 1773 and 1774, a New York newspaper reported Dutch families gathering to honor St. Nicholas's death. Fast forward to 1804, and John Pintard, a member of the New York Historical Society, distributed woodcuts of St. Nicholas, incorporating now familiar Santa imagery, such as the stockings over the fireplace, Christmas trees, etc. Washington Irving, Pintard's brother-in-law, further fueled the Sinterklaas stories in his book, The History of New York.
Yeah.
Referring to St. Nicholas as the patron saint of New York City in 1809. I just love that it's further fueled the Sinterklaas stories in The History of New York.
The History of New York.
Sorry, I got to say it like a Yankee. The History of New York.
That's how it was sold.
Extra, extra. Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is here.
Santa Claus is now Santa Claus. Santa Claus, ladies and gentlemen.
In the 1820s, it marked the beginning of Christmas shopping advertisements.
Of course.
And by the 1840s, newspapers had dedicated sections for holiday ads featuring the emerging image of Santa Claus. And it was only a matter of time before stores capitalized on the chance to attract families with the allure of meeting a live Santa Claus.
Wait, what do you mean the allure? What do you mean?
Like getting families to bring their kids.
He's not.
Because the point of it is
he's not real.
Oh my God.
That's not really Santa
in the mall? It's not, Ian.
Jesus Christ.
You're going to be like, you better be like Elf when he goes in. He's like, you sit on a throne of lies.
You better hope that there's no parents listening with their children in the car. I think that ship has sailed, though. We've said fuck at least 30 times.
I would assume so. We talked about fucking the Virgin Mary, Ian.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, Santa is real, you know? So
now, in 1822, Clement Clark Moore crafted the iconic poem, "Twas the Night Before Christmas," popularizing the image of Santa flying in a sleigh led by 8 reindeer. Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen.
Let's put that to a hip hop beat.
Dancer.
You're just saying Dancer. You can't just stop. What is this? An entire verse? It's just the names?
Yeah, it's just the names. That's all I got, bro. That's all I got. You're welcome. All right, whatever.
You could have just said it like you did it the first time and it was fire. I
did fine. Trash. I don't know what you're talking about.
Whack. Get off the stage.
Now, this immediately elevated Santa Claus to the American icon status. In 1881, political cartoonist Thomas Nast illustrated Moore's poem, creating the modern image of Santa as a cheerful, plump man in a bright red suit, surrounded by elves and Mrs. Claus in his North Pole workshop.
Very nice, very nice.
Do you remember the North Pole in Colorado?
Yeah, Colorado Springs.
Yeah, I just got an advertisement for that. Like
they're advertising now?
Yeah, bro.
Probably a good thing. There was a few years where they were kind of going downhill.
I think, that's true. But it looks like it's popping off, dog.
Hey, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. Hey, you know, speaking of Thomas Nast, I wonder if he ever made any nasty illustrations because he's a political cartoonist, you know?
Yeah.
Thomas Nast.
Wow. I mean, I get what you're saying. That was good. Yeah.
He probably made quite a few. So the early 1980s... Sorry, that joke was just so sick. I got it.
I wish I had the sound. You could put it there.
The early 1890s saw the Salvation Army adopting Santa Claus suits to fundraise for Christmas meals, a tradition continuing with Salvation Army Santas ringing bells on American street corners and in front of every Walmart ever. In the, in the U.S., Santa, now accompanied by 9 reindeer, including the famous Rudolph, is depicted flying from house to house on Christmas Eve. Santa's visit involves entering through the chimney, filling stockings with toys and candy canes, reading letters from children, and enjoying milk and cookies left out for him. Santa's naughty and nice list remains a central part of this festive narrative.
Where's the fucking oranges, Santa? Where's the goddamn oranges?
And where's the walnuts? Also, still to this day, I'm the only person I've ever met that gets walnuts in their stocking, too.
Really? I've met a few people that get walnuts.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, don't just say no before you say that. That makes it me feel like I'm crazy.
You are crazy.
I have not met a single human that I've had a conversation with about stockings. So out of the 7 people that I've met that I've had this conversation, none of them knew what the fuck I was talking about.
Huh.
Which is weird, because the Nutcracker is like a big... It's a big Christmas thing. Rudolph, born over a century after the original 8 reindeer. Those are some old motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm.
He became a Christmas sensation thanks to Robert L. May's story in 1939. Rudolph's bright red nose saved Christmas during a foggy Christmas Eve, and the story became an instant hit. Leave it to Americans to make millions off of other cultural myths and legends.
It's our largest export, entertainment.
Yeah.
It's what we do the best.
That is what we do the best.
We distract everyone.
That clicked a second after I started talking. That's true. Now, Ward actually sold millions of copies of the story. And then Johnny Marks' 1949 song based on Rudolph's history, recorded by Gene Autry, became a bestseller.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer
had a very shiny car nose.
He had a car nose? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. Well, he probably had a red rocket, too, you know. As all animals do. The iconic Christmas television movie Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, narrated by Burl Ives in 1964, continues to hold a special place in the hearts of people, solidifying Rudolph's status as a Christmas icon to this day. Pour one out for Rudolph, ladies and gentlemen!
Rudolph!
Pew, pew, pew!
Honestly, that movie, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, it's the claymation one.
It's a banger, bro.
It's so good.
It's a banger. It's a guaranteed banger, bro. Cornelius is the best part.
Cornelius, and then he becomes friends with the abominable snowman.
Wasn't he scared of the dentist? He's like scared of the dentist.
So, and then the elf is a little dentist.
And then the elf becomes the dentist.
He's like, oh,
no. Yeah,
and he has like the chip.
So many side stories.
Oh, man. I love that one.
Yeah, it's a great, great story. The abominable snowman to this day still kind of scares me.
Oh, it's the scariest thing ever.
Because I think it just ties back to that childhood trauma of like seeing him for the first time and being like, holy shit, that's fucking terrifying. Yeah, dude, he's fucking scary.
And it turned out he had a bad tooth.
He did. And that's all that had to happen was the dentist just had to fix his tooth.
Yeah. And then he was like, all jolly and happy. And then he put the star on top of the Christmas tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope other people understand because that's a nostalgia trip. That's a nostalgia trip that's deserving, you know?
Yeah. The island of misfit toys and everything. Oh, man.
Classic.
So we'll talk about like what Santa Claus is all about around the world.
Yes,
right?
Yes, because it's not just about America.
Yeah. So I found this, like, as I was reading through history.com of the article with Santa Claus, and they started talking about the, what other people, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about, like, all of these different, like, narrations of him. So in the 18th century America, Santa Claus was not the only St. Nicholas-inspired gift bringer during Christmas. Across the globe, various figures and traditions emerged. So Christkind or Kris Kringle. There we go. So Christkind or Kris Kringle, known as the Christ Child, which is kind of odd, was believed to bring presents to well-behaved Swiss and German children, often accompanied by St. Nicholas on his festive missions. In Scandinavia, the cheerful elf Joltomten I believe is how it's pronounced, was thought to distribute gifts in a sleigh that was drawn by goats this time. So he was
the god of all traits.
Yeah,
goats.
The goats. He was the goat.
Just a bunch of M&Ms.
The
just
goat.
Just a bunch of M&Ms.
That's it. Just M&Ms.
Just M&Ms. Just drawing the sleigh. Every single one of them just like,
and that's what actually powers him.
It's just the energy made by his jawline. Oh, that's great. Now, according to English legend, Father Christmas would visit each home on Christmas Eve to fill children's stockings with delightful holiday treats. In France, Père Noël took on the responsibility of filling the shoes of French children. Russian folklore tells of an elderly woman named Babushka, who, feeling remorseful for giving the wise men wrong directions to Bethlehem, now visits Russian children on January 5th, leaving gifts at their bedsides in the hopes that one of them is the baby Jesus and she might be forgiven. Kind of a... Yeah.
You know, she's putting her work in.
Yeah, you know what?
She's
I think by now you're forgiven, lady. Like,
but she can only be forgiven by Jesus because she... She
tough.
Tried to
tough,
mislead
right
yeah. the wise men so that they couldn't be there for the birth of Jesus.
Not to worry, lady. He'll be coming back anytime now. Now, in Italy, a parallel narrative involves La Befana, a kindly witch who rides a broomstick down chimneys to deliver toys into the stockings of fortunate children.
God, could you imagine that? Just taking a broomstick and you're like... There's nothing quiet about
no.
La Befana.
No, she stomps in that bitch. Well, she rides in that bitch. So meanwhile, in Spain, the gift-giving duty falls on the three kings themselves, who deliver presents on Epiphany, January 6th.
Now, Ian... Let's get to the fun shit.
I'm so fucking excited.
Let's get to the fun shit. You ready?
So fucking excited. Those of you who have waited 42 minutes and made it this far, you're in for a fucking treat.
Now, as the cheerful legend of Santa Claus spread far and wide, another character emerged from the shadows to counterbalance the festivities.
Instead of ho, 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 he goes,
because for every hero, there must be a villain.
Yes.
For Luke Skywalker, there is Darth Vader. For Rocky Balboa, there is Ivan Drago. And for Batman, there is the Joker. Their stories would not be so epic or memorable without their dark and evil antagonist. For our cheerful Christmas icon, Santa Claus, there is a dark, more sinister, evil creature.
Evil!
Named Krampus. A mythical figure deeply rooted in European folklore and traditions, embodying the darker aspects of the holiday season.
Yeah.
Now, Krampus is a mangled, deranged-faced half-goat, half-demon with giant horns, razor-sharp teeth, with a long, gnarly, pointed tongue and a fur-covered body that walks on one foot and one hoof. That wraps chains around himself, symbolizing the binding of the devil, who comes one night before the traditional St. Nicholas Day on December 5th, known as Krampusnacht.
Yes, yes, yes. It's
or,
like Krampus snot.
Yes.
Those of you who were wondering.
Or otherwise known as Krampus Night. To either beat those who have misbehaved with branches and sticks, torture them in the night, eat them, or even drag them away in his sack to his lair in hell.
You know, I would much rather be beaten with a branch or a stick than eaten. So,
yeah, I don't know. It could be quick.
A quick eating?
Yeah, you know, just like off with the head first, just like just bite and get that
you
shit
you really think
dog.
He's taking off the head first? This seems like a man who enjoys it.
He does. He does. Mm. And honestly, the movie Krampus, like they all end up in the snow globe at the end or whatever.
I haven't actually seen Krampus.
Fuck.
So yeah, we don't need to talk about the ending or give away any spoilers.
Spoiler!
Anybody.
It's so good. It's got, I don't even know who's in it, but anyways, it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
like,
it's a good
the little
one.
His elf creatures come out and yeah. they're like all terrorizing and they kill the whole fucking family. Adam Scott is in
continuing
it.
with the hopefully all of you guys have seen Krampus
it came out
unlike
like three,
me.
It came out like 4 or 5 years ago, bro. It's too like if you haven't seen it by now,
don't know,
that
man.
Sucks.
I don't know, man. All I know is that Krampus gives a whole new meaning to that naughty list.
Yeah, he does.
He does.
He does. Very scary.
Now, you might be asking yourselves, why would such a demonic figure exist in the midst of such a joyful time of year? The answer is simple. I mean, if you didn't think of this already, what are you doing? Santa is in on it.
Yeah. See, Santa is in on murdering children.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for his economy. It's
fucking metal, dude.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's almost like a good old domestic abuse relationship when you boil it down, right? Santa has this very positive reputation to uphold. While Krampus does not hate Christmas itself, he hates the ones without Christmas spirit. And what did we all learn while watching the Will Ferrell movie Elf? Well, Santa can't do a goddamn thing without the Christmas spirit.
Not a goddamn thing.
So Krampus comes on December 5th, the day before the more traditional celebration of St. Nicholas, and causes terror and mischief to all the assholes, the kids, and adults alike, while Santa comes in soon after bearing gifts and treats to keep up his almighty hero of Christmas reputation. It's really that simple.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Naturally, the next question you might be asking is, well, how long has this obviously real character been around?
Obviously real. Emphasis.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Krampus was thought to have been part of a pre-German pagan ritual for the winter solstice, and according to legend, he is the son of, is this Hel? Heel?
I think it's El.
El?
Because it's a Norse god. Usually the H's are pretty silent.
Ah, okay. So L.
I just said that out of my ass, dude. I'm so... You believed me.
H-E-L. God. You sounded confident.
God, dude. Just believe anything you hear, Cooper. God.
Now, he was the Norse god of the underworld. So, he's been around. And then, after St. Nicholas's death, he was latched onto the Christmas season with the spread of Christianity, and the Catholic Church even tried to ban him due to his resemblance to the devil.
Ah... Yeah. Yeah, that tracks. Christian church will absolutely ban anything that's got to do with Satan. So
now doing a deep dive into Krampus is like actually quite a bit of a shallow dive. Because if you read one article, you've literally read them all. And so this, obviously, I don't have time to read books.
They made a whole movie about him, Cooper.
They did make the...
have you seen the movie?
We already talked about everything we talked about.
You know how in the end they end up in the snow globe?
Yeah. Ian, way to spoil the movie.
Oh, jeez.
So sorry. So there's really just like about 5 minutes worth of research to be done. And if you search Krampus, there will literally be hundreds of articles where... they mostly dive into just random historical events where something might have been mentioned about Krampus and then go into elaborate detail describing origins of names. And they always bring up the modern day celebration of Krampuslauf, which is Krampus Run, where people dress up like Krampus on December 5th and they drink copious amounts of alcohol and chase women around and children and sometimes beating them with sticks, but only in the legs.
Only in the legs.
They talk about this. So people like, they'll fucking dress up and then they chase people and beat the shit out of them. Well, yeah. They just get hammered.
Leave it to humans. Yeah. No, we'll think of anything if it's an excuse to drink. If it's an excuse to drink, we have it.
It's super funny. I was reading about, I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, I just want to know, like, the creepy old, like, ass folklore and, like, who died maybe because of this. Like, was there, like, you know, some sort of, like, crusade of Krampus? But no, it's just, they always go into the modern day Krampus Run and then people just get in shithoused and fucking beating each other with sticks.
Naturally.
So, since this specific topic is not as vivid as one would hope, we have decided to give you guys one of the traditional Krampus stories from Austria. And then for some fun, we did some creepy pastas that I found on the internet about our favorite little Christmas devil.
Yeah.
And so for those of you who are not aware of what a creepypasta is, they are essentially the campfire stories of the internet.
So sit back, relax with your favorite glass of wine, whiskey, rum, beer, hot cocoa, heroin, whatever
eggnog.
Is your... Eggnog, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, either heroin or eggnog.
Hennessy.
Yeah, Hennessy too.
Give me that Henny, son.
Yeah, yeah. Crack. Whichever one you want.
Heroin. And
I did say heroin twice.
Ah.
Yeah.
We got the bases covered.
Did you just miss me saying heroin
did,
twice?
I did miss you.
I said it two times.
Gosh. Now you said it three times.
Do you hate me?
Kind of.
Okay, cool. No, I just needed to know.
Yeah.
For my own.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For my own. Fucking
don't forget the mushrooms.
I quit this podcast.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
Kyle right. quit the band.
So I think we should. Scotty doesn't know. Anyway,
two different references. I went Tenacious D, and you go Euro Trip.
Yeah, basically the same movie. Deactivated what? Lasers with magic.
All right. Sorry, guys. So this is the Austria story, right? This is Krampus and the Naughty Children.
Now, once upon a time, in a quaint village nestled in the snow-covered mountains of Austria, the air was filled with festive cheer as Saint Nicholas prepared for his annual visit. The children eagerly anticipated the arrival of gifts and treats, hoping to be on the nice list. However, hidden in the shadows lurked Krampus, the fearsome companion of St. Nicholas. As the night fell on December 5th, the day of Krampusnacht, a sense of unease descended upon the village. The children, unaware of the darker side of the holiday, continued to play mischief. On that fateful night, as the clock struck midnight, a chilling wind swept through the village, announcing the arrival of Krampus. His cloven hoof clacked across the cobblestone streets as he slinked from house to house.
And it's just one hoof, so it's just...
Chains rattling with an eerie sound. Krampus, with his twisted horns and menacing grin, approached the homes of the mischievous children. The misbehaving youngsters, tucked snugly in their beds, were unaware of the impending visitation. Suddenly, the night air was filled with a spine-chilling howl as Krampus entered their dreams. In each home, Krampus confronted the naughty children. He brandished his bundle of birch sticks, ready to administer his punishment. With a swift swat, he admonished those who had lied, stolen, or shown disobedience. The sound of his sticks echoed through the village, serving as a dark reminder of the consequences of wayward behavior. The most mischievous children were swept away in Krampus's sack, destined for a fate dealt in hell. As the night dwindled, Krampus disappeared into the wintry darkness, leaving behind a village now hushed in the aftermath of his visit. The next morning, the children awoke to find their homes untouched, but a sense of trepidation lingered. The story of Krampus and his visit spread throughout the village, becoming a cautionary tale told to misbehaving children for generations to come. From that day forward, the threat of Krampus served as a reminder that, alongside the joy of the holiday season, there existed a darker side that demanded respect for the values of kindness and obedience. And so, in the heart of the Austrian mountains, the legend of Krampus endured, forever blending the festive with the cautionary.
Bum, bum, bum. So basically, he showed up, gave some kids some nightmares.
Yeah. But those scary fucking nightmares, getting dragged out of your bed in a sack by some demonic creature with one hoof and a foot and chains wrapped around him, razor sharp teeth and one gnarly ass sharp tongue. Bro.
One person's nightmare, another person's kink.
Kink.com is really missing the bar.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Where's my Krampus porn when I need it? You know what I'm saying? Tis the season, motherfuckers. Porn up. Get on it. Brazzers. All right. So this is actually a creepypasta poem. Written by what? Jay Spezial?
Yeah, Jay Spezial.
Okay.
And I actually got permission to share this from Jay Spezial.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, yeah. That's actually kind of fucking sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Jay. It's Jay period Spezial.
Okay.
So if y'all want to go look him up?
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely. Like, that's really cool. I didn't know that. That's, yeah. All right. Okay. Shout out to you.
So this is, there's like three little poems within this, three segments of this.
All right. Insert narrator Ian. Each year on December 5th, a person in my hometown is brutally murdered. The police are at a loss. With each victim, a poetic story is left behind. Below are the stories from the past 3 years. Frederick loved to smile, for he was always glad. Happy, warm, and gentle. Never, ever sad. But he had a secret that only he knew. This man loved to strangle children. He turned them cold and blue. The town folk never found them, for he was very smart. Frederick took their corpses and pulled them all apart. It couldn't be young Frederick, everyone would say. He is a man of God. We always see him pray. The cold night came, and Frederick rested his head. But soon he heard a scratching underneath his bed. Frederick trembled as he looked, oil lamp in hand. On his bedroom floor, the demon had a plan. Away with you, beast! The night is dark and long. You have no business here, for I have done no wrong. Krampus only laughed as he shook his rusty chain. He hung Frederick by the neck until he writhed in pain. The lynx constricted, digging into skin. Frederick then cried out, paying for his sin. He begged and pleaded until his final breath, with a beautiful snap, Frederick bled to death. Krampus hung him out to dry, and all the townfolk began to cry, but not the children, for now their souls were free, and under Frederick's body, the phantoms danced with glee.
Ooh!
Banger.
I like that one.
Banger.
That's a good one.
Banger. I like that he snapped his neck, but then he bled to death. That's like a forceful snap.
It's a very forceful snap.
Very, very forceful snap.
It's like the skin snapped off. Like, yeah. That is a hard 90-degree snap.
Yeah, it's like an Indian rug burn on, you know, but like times but like 30.
I'm just scared to do Indian rug burns because I'm scared like I'm going to rip their skin, you know?
Well, you're a very strong man. You should probably not be giving people Indian
rug burns.
You know,
Mom used to fucking have people like bet that they like she would not give in on like an Indian rug burn.
Yeah, because Mom is a freak of nature.
It's insane. That's just scary.
Her pain tolerance is crazy. She's the person who will eat the hottest pepper on the island and be like, well, what do you mean? I thought that was a bell pepper.
That was fine.
Yeah. All right, so here's another one. This is poem number 2. Greta loved herself more than she could bear. She never had enough and could never, ever share. Want was never more. It was only need. Her envy grew and grew, and with it came her greed. Greta needed more, but money wasn't flush, so she stole from her family. It gave her quite the rush. It is not enough, to herself she would say. I must have it all. There is no other way. Into her grandparents' home, Greta crept inside. They had many treasures, jewelry and gemstones pied. But when she looked about, wealth she did not find. Only ancient Krampus, with something on his mind. Greta shrieked and trembled, staring at his claws. She knew there would be no mercy from this evil Santa Claus. You shall have the riches, Krampus said with a grin, and he gave them to her after peeling off her skin.
Ooh.
Gnarly, bro.
Super gnarly. All right, last one.
What a vain woman.
Last poem.
Yeah, last poem, and then we got another story. Herman was a doctor, for that's what he would say, and every single patient they would have to pay. The syllables didn't line up there for a second. Yeah. Let me restart that. Okay. Got to do Jay Wright. He's a poet.
Yeah.
You know, you got to read it right.
You got to do Jay Wright.
Yeah. Herman was a doctor, for that's what he would say. And every single patient, they would have to pay. He cut and pulled and burned. And after he was done, for more he always yearned. The surgeon was a butcher who had a taste for swine. With their bleeding flesh, he'd pair a fine red wine. The hunger took him, body, mind, and soul. Yet this evil, it never took its toll. Herman was alone. In his chair he sat. All this human meat had made him very fat. He drifted off to slumber and began to snore until an angry Krampus burst through the door. Herman could not move. He wet himself in fright.
Krampus licked his lips and let out a squeal of delight. First, he gouged out his eyes, and Hermann could not see. Then Krampus filleted his tongue. It was tender as could be. Christmas is joyous, full of love and cheer. But you must remember the one that we all fear. So be kind to one another. Show love and heed this text, or Krampus will find you, and you will certainly be next.
Ooh! Granted, Hermann was eating people. Like, Hermann was a cannibal. Okay? Yeah. Hermann deserved...
He deserved to go down.
Hermann!
Like, he deserved, like, getting his tongue filleted.
I don't think...
1,000%.
I don't think Greta really deserved it. I mean, she stole some stuff, sure. But, like, to get skinned alive, that's, like, worse than eye for an eye, right?
Yeah.
Frederick kind of deserved it. He was a child killer, right?
Yeah.
So Frederick deserved it. Greta, though, kind of an overreaction on Krampus's part.
Now, this next one is one that I found by Mr. Demon to you. And that's Demon, D-E-M-O-N, 2 is in the number, and then U is the letter.
One word.
So... Honestly, I've always loved a good Christmas, but now that's not possible because of it. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. Let me start at the beginning. Last Christmas Eve, my son and I were watching A Christmas Story, and it got to be relatively late. So I sent him off to bed, knowing I still had some final gifts to wrap up. A couple hours after I got done sitting up all of the presents under the tree, I went to bed. But I couldn't help but feel as if there was a presence watching me. I just felt like there was something in my house. And of course, being curious and scared, I looked all around to see if anyone was hiding, and as I figured, there was no one. So after all of that, I went to bed and put off the feeling that someone was watching me, figuring it was just my imagination. Then in the middle of the night, I woke up to a noise. It was a noise of chains shaking and dragging on the hardwood floor. Coming out of my sleep, I couldn't think what those sounds might be. Suddenly, I heard in this deep, demonic voice coming from the living room.
Ah, you're too naughty. You had all the chances to be good. But you didn't take them now, did you?
No. No, please don't hurt me.
I could hear my son pleading to whatever that thing was. And in a frightened panic, I threw my covers up and I ran out of my bedroom and I ran towards the living room where I heard my son's quick, frightening screams. I was in such a panic, I couldn't find my voice to yell for my son. I was just crazy out of my mind. Before I reached the living room, I heard two loud snaps, followed by a small popping sound. When I reached the living room, I stopped in horror and disbelief. I saw a tall, goat-like creature wearing an old, dirty cloak wrapped in chains. He was standing on what looked like a hoof and a human foot in a puddle of something dark and thick. The creature was holding the mutilated corpse of my son by his two now broken arms. Blood was steadily pouring and spouting from where my son's head had once been. His bones were protruding through the skin of his arms, and the air filled with the smell of iron. And I almost threw up right then and there. The creature turned to me and smiled, revealing flesh in his razor-sharp teeth. This beast then turned back to my son's headless corpse and stared at it as if it was admiring its work. Struck with what I felt like a hammer to my chest, I began to weep as I prayed this was a dream. But the pain was too real, and this was no dream. My son was dead. I fell to my knees and looked upon the demon and asked, "Why?"
"Because Krampus doesn't like naughty children."
And out of the corner of my eye, I saw some Christmas presents with the wrapping paper torn ever so slightly. Krampus had caught my son peeking into the Christmas gifts. And that's it.
All right. Yeah, no, that's a banger. Wow, that was fucked up.
That was so fucked up.
Viewer discretion is advised, we could have said before that. But I feel like there were some triggers in there.
That's what you get a blue ribbon for.
Jesus Christ. Holy shit.
But yeah, to all the kids out there, don't fuck about, otherwise Krampus is going to come snap your arms and eat your head.
What a dick.
Or skin you alive. or terrify your nightmares and treat you like Jeepers Creepers.
Or he'll beat you with
Jeepers
a stick.
Creepers, I meant fucking Freddy. Damn it.
He'll beat you with a stick.
Beat you with a stick.
With a birch stick.
A birch sticks. A bunch of sticks. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just notating, we're also going to be gone in January.
Yeah. So Cooper's going to be gone. I'll be here, but I won't be doing the podcast.
That is true. We're going to try and get next week's episode out. I'm working on it now, but we are taking off out of town, and it's going to be a little difficult. Hold tight.
Yeah, we have a lot of fucking shit going on. You know what, dude? Hold on. We're getting all apologizing. We're getting all sincere apologies. Uh-huh. No. We have given you people 31 weeks in a row of podcast. We deserve a break.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to. We deserve a break.
I'm going to go to Ireland.
Yes.
And I see my girlfriend.
We tried
there.
The whole remote thing before with our previous podcast. Difficult. It just doesn't work, it's man. It's not as good.
It's not the same vibe.
It's not as good. The same vibes. So we went to give you guys quality material, and in order for that to happen, y'all are just gonna have to fucking wait. But you know what? When we come back, do we have a plan for you? We do.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Ian. Do you have anything for the kids?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to eat all of your heads because I'm Krampus. No, I'm just kidding. If you've made it this far in the podcast with all of our tomfoolery, we do appreciate it. Seriously, it means the world to us. Of course, again, if you've made it this far, you are a fucking champion, my friend. And I mean that with all of my boners. So thank you so much for listening. And Cooper, take it away.
Stay beautiful, bitches. Because we fucking love you.
We fucking love you.